How's everyone doing? You're listening to A Father Heard. This is a show that focuses on faith, family, and wellness. This is your host, Marcus, and I'm glad you have decided to join me on today. It is the 18th of October, 2021, and I want to welcome you once again for just tuning in and listening to the things that we have to talk about on this show. And today what I wanted to do is I just wanted to take us back to a previous episode that aired on February 17th of 2020, so a little over a year ago. So if you pay attention to the date, that was around the time that we were getting ready to move into the pandemic in March, right? So a little bit before March when we went into the pandemic. And at this time, I had had a conversation with Mr. Michael Cox of Whole Life Priorities. And we were talking about grief and loss. And so I figured I wanted to revisit this once again, just because there's been so much that's been going on over the past 18, 19 months, whatever it is, right? And even like looking back over the past couple weeks, I've known so many people, or I know so many people, excuse me, that have lost loved ones, lost of jobs, lost of friends, loss of family members, all of those things, right? And so I just wanted to go ahead and just go back to thinking about grief and just learning about grief and being able to have another resource, right? To figure out how we can best support people that might be dealing with stuff, because in a sense, we're all dealing with grief. You know, whether it's the loss of what life used to be like compared to how it is now, right? And even though things are shifting and we're coming from stage four into stage three and whatever that might mean, right? There still has been a lot that has transpired over the past year and a half, 18, 19 months, whatever it is, right? And so I just want to share this with you all again. It's been chopped up a little bit. Just to get to the meat of that conversation with Mr. Michael Cox. And so I just want for you guys just to sit back, relax, take some time to listen in and you guys take care of yourself, because there's a lot that's going on in this world right now. I love you guys. And y'all be blessed. How's everyone doing? You're listening to A Father Heard. This is a show that focuses on faith, family, and wellness. This is your host, Marcus, and I'm glad you had decided to join me on today. And I have the pleasure of having a guest in the office with me, or in the studio with me today. I'm actually on location at his home, and so I'm here with Michael Cox of Whole Priorities for this episode, which is episode 4 of season 3. And we're going to have a conversation on something that is extremely important that all of us will have to experience at some point in our lives. Some of us might be going through it right now or coming out of it, heading into it. And so we're going to have a conversation around grief and loss, and just happy to have Michael here from Whole Life Priorities. And so you want to tell us a little bit about yourself before we get started?
Yeah. So hello. Good to be here. Currently, I am in private practice here in Pflugerville. With Whole Life Priorities, and so I see families, adolescents, individuals, couples, see families here in the area. Married to a wife as of July, it'll be 19 years, okay. I think. 19 years. And then three boys, they're 13, 11, and 8.
Okay, so it's quiet in your home.
Oh, no, right now, because they're at school. But lots always happening, lots happening. So, she's an educator, and I've been doing that, I think, 22 years now. And so we do a lot of things together. We do marriage seminars. We do marriage retreats, couples counseling, that kind of stuff. Premarital counseling as needed for couples. Okay. So that's kind of me professionally. We live here in Pflugerville. Been here 3 years. November was 3 years.
Okay, so 3 years in Pflugerville.
Yeah, we were in North Austin for 3 years before that.
Okay, and where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Hobbs, New Mexico.
Okay.
But I left there to go to college, and so I've been in Texas now longer than I was in New Mexico, but grew up in New Mexico.
Okay, so how long have you been in Texas?
Man, you're gonna make me do math. So I went to school in 1995.
Okay.
And so I've been in Texas since then. A 2-year stint where I was a youth pastor in New Mexico. Give or take 20 years or something like that in Texas.
Okay, and so you said you've been in the Austin area for...
6 years.
6 years now. And so what do you like about Austin?
I like the access to outdoors. We get to get outside a lot. I like that we're in Pflugerville now as opposed to Austin proper, because of costs and
taxes
are better, a little bit better. Yeah. I do like that Pflugerville feels a little bit more like a community. There's access to whatever we want to do or don't want to do in the area. So I like that. I like that we are on the outskirts. And so when we want to get into the city, we can, but we don't have to be in the city.
Exactly.
So I like the opportunities and options that are out there. We moved to this area from up in the panhandle in Texas.
Okay.
Primarily so that our boys could see a little bit more diversity, have a little more access to things outside of the country. Not the country, but the geographic countries.
Yes.
the country.
Okay.
So just more opportunities, those kind of things in the area.
Okay. So if you could be anywhere in the world, where would you want to be?
Oh, man. I remember reading that on the list. Honestly, I would love to be somewhere in the mountains. Like, I was trying to narrow it down. The most exposure to the mountains I've had is in Colorado.
Okay, I used to live in Colorado.
Did you? Okay. Yes. I just recently was on a trip doing some business work in Eagle, Colorado.
Okay.
Man, it was gorgeous up there.
Yeah.
I couldn't afford it by any means, but beautiful. So anywhere in the mountains, I hadn't really narrowed. I've seen a taste of the mountains in Utah. I don't know if I'd ever actually want to live in Utah particularly, but yeah. I love the mountains. There's something peaceful about it. Man, when I'm in the mountains, I just feel like I'm a little bit closer to God.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I can breathe better recreationally. I love being outside. And so I have never lived in a whole lot of snow.
Yeah.
So that would probably be the test for me.
Yeah.
Can I handle it?
There is definitely a lot of snow for sure. One of the things I remember is like when I left Colorado and I went from Colorado to Illinois. There are no mountains where I was at. It's close to Chicago. And that was what I remember. Is like, I used to see the mountains every day for 6.5 years, you know, and then I was waking up, it was like, no mountains.
Right.
So it was like, I'm not in Colorado anymore.
Yeah. It's a little different.
Yeah, but the mountains are definitely beautiful. And then we'll ask one more question to get us warmed up before we jump into like fatherhood and talking about grief and whatnot. If there was a movie that was made about your life, what genre would it be? And who would play you?
It'd definitely be classic. I remember something like a classic movie.
Okay.
I remember from a very early age, I've always been told kind of an old soul. You know, black folks do sometimes, they're talking about, man, he is 15, but going on 50, you know, whatever it may be. And it'd have to be Sidney Poitier.
Okay.
And maybe younger days, Sidney Poitier, obviously, but I highly respect that man and his work. And it'd be an honor if he could play me in my story.
Yeah, sure.
Definitely Sidney.
He's when I think about actors now, there aren't very many that are great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like one of the greats. And so
yes, I've read his memoir or his autobiography. Very, very inspiring.
Okay.
To just hear about his life where he had, in the time of where he was big.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty phenomenal. So as a person, at least from what I've read and have seen, hands down.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So let's jump into some questions about fatherhood. You mentioned that you have three boys. And so what was it like for you the first time you became a father? Like, let's kind of walk us through that a little bit.
All right. So, yeah, so we have three boys. Man, and my wife and I have talked about this, so I don't think it's a bad thing. I think I wanted to be a father before I wanted to be a husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have always loved children. And so really... I remember getting my first son's name. Like, I had his name picked before I ever met my wife, of who I wanted, what his name to be.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is Josiah, out of the biblical character Josiah.
Yes.
And so that when a moment when it happened, joy, fear, everything, like every emotion that's possible,
mm-hmm.
Was happening at that time. But excitement about it's finally here. It took us 5 years to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And we really thought that it just wasn't in the plans for us. And so we even started the adoption process.
Okay.
And it got as far as a home visit, and then my wife got pregnant. And so always wanted to be a father. And so the moment that it happened, man, it was complete joy.
Okay. Yeah. And then how do you feel like you've grown since you become a dad?
I've learned to relax, kind of chillax a little bit more.
I'm working on that, for sure. I'm definitely working on that.
And it's a constant process. They probably could tell you a number of ways I still could do more of that.
Yes.
But man, I remember, I was a youth pastor for a number of years, so I've always been around young people. But in my personal life, I could be very stringent and methodical about things.
Yes.
And they have thrown that out the door. Mm-hmm. You know, you still see some of that in them, but for the most part, just being children and being spontaneous. My wife has had played a role in that as well. But I think as a father, though, it just has helped me just to relax and learn that take each moment as a moment.
Yeah, that's, like I said, that's something that I'm working on. And I've always worked with kids, and it's very different working with other people's kids than when you're working with your own. And
yeah.
Extending grace and mercy to mine, yes, is something that I'm truly like learning how to walk every right. day, you know. And mine are 4 and 6 years old, and so I'm like yeah. waiting to get to the top of the hump so we can start cruising down a little bit. But it's one of those things, like you said, you really have to learn to appreciate the moment and just mm-hmm. and be present. And
yeah.
that's something that I'm truly working towards, yeah. you know.
And I think it changes with each phase of their life, because, you know, I've got a 13-year-old now, mm-hmm. and most of my work has been with teenagers. And it's different, right, to sit and talk with parents about parenting and what they're doing. It's a whole other thing when that teenager's in your house and they're in your space on a consistent basis and they're having their own stuff, how to respond and how to embrace that moment and be that, allow them to be who they're going to be. It is different.
For sure.
It's a different world.
And I appreciate the fact that, like, we're having this conversation and I'm speaking, you know, with a counselor, a therapist, and I've started going to counseling myself to address, you know, my parenting issues and being able to be the best for my kids, you know.
Yeah.
And I know when we think about, you know, the African American community, lots of times we don't look at, you know, counseling or things of that nature as an option for us. And it's a very, it's very beneficial, I would say. Mm-hmm. And as someone who works with fathers and, like, then I'm struggling myself and trying to figure out, like, how to do it. It's like, okay, am I really, like, am I a fraud or what? You know, and I know I'm good at what I do. I definitely see that. But it's always good to be able to have an outside perspective, you know, on life.
Yeah.
And so I guess as we're talking about this, let's shift a little bit. So we said that this conversation was going to be around grief and loss. And that's why I definitely wanted to talk with Michael as a counselor, so he can kind of help us to, you know, really give us an understanding of what exactly, you know, grief and loss is. Like I mentioned, all of us will be going through this. I recently had a loss of my grandmother. Christmas Eve. Was just talking to Michael. He had a loss a few days ago, or yesterday, I believe it was.
On Wednesday,
you know, and so I think this is a great conversation for us to be having right now. And so I guess, why do you think this is such an important topic to discuss?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said we all experience it, right? Everybody at some point in life is going to experience loss. And so that might be a loss of a loved one, a pet, a job. We're going to experience loss. It's going to happen. It's part of the fold of life. And so not talking about it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right? And so I think having extended conversation around it helps people understand how do they handle the grief from that loss and what does that look like, and that it's okay to grieve. Mm-hmm. And so I think having the conversation is extremely important, just to give people the freedom and the okay to be able to grieve and understand and learn what that looks like.
So you mentioned like a few different places of what that might look like. So when we're thinking about grief, like on a day-to-day basis, like, what might that be? Like, if you're thinking of words to explain grief without saying grief, what would you say? Like, first thing that comes to my mind is regret. So, like, the regret of not spending enough time with my grandmother when she was alive, you know, and not being able to do that now. So what do you think of when we say grief in that sense?
I'm glad you clarified that, because actually when I wrote my notes, I was kind of wasn't quite sure what you meant. Like, what does that look like day to day? You know, I think, to me, kind of what you're describing is that regret. I don't know if that's necessarily just grief by itself. I think that's part of the process of grieving. And so, you know, to even try to define grief, it's a journey of how do I process loss. Mm-hmm. When I've lost something, what does that look like? And I think that looks different for every person. And so there are going to be those times where you have regrets of what I did not do. You know, if you even look at some of the different stages of grief, you're going to have even some of that denial. I can't believe this person's gone. There's all kinds of things that happen. But I think the thing about grief is that because we're all individual people, we are going to process it differently. Exactly. And so your proximity to that person that has gone may determine what your grief looks like. And so, or what the relationship was like, good, bad, or indifferent, will determine how you grieve, but it also your own personal support, the way that you handle your emotions, all those things I think play a role in what your grief looks like.
Yeah. But as I was thinking about the question, I think, because we're saying the word grief, but I think there are lots of emotions that are connected to that, you know. Mm-hmm. So some people might have the guilt, you know, they might have shame, they might have sadness, that sort of thing. And I think whether it's I've lost a dog, or I've lost a job, or I've experienced a breakup, or, you know, I'm not able to dunk a basketball, and that was something that was my identity for however many years, and so now I'm trying to, I guess, establish like a new normal. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah, and it's that process, and it's, again, depending on what has happened and what you've lost determines if you even hit some of those stages, right? So one of the stages is shock. Mm-hmm. You know, I think about my father-in-law who just passed Wednesday. There's no shock value for us because he lived with Alzheimer's for a long time, had pneumonia. So the process is kind of, we saw it coming. And so it was more, there's a level of relief, at least on my part, that he's not suffering. Mm-hmm. To those, and so that may not be the same perspective as my wife or my mother-in-law or her siblings, but for me that's my perspective. And it was a similar perspective when I lost my dad 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Was that there was a relief because, man, yes, I miss him, yes, I'm sad he's gone, but also we're just relieved that, all right, he doesn't have to suffer anymore, we don't have to watch him deteriorate, those kind of things. And so we may not even hit all of those stages that's described in there. It just, I think, depends on the circumstance and the individual and how they process things.
Yes. I was, like I had mentioned to Michael earlier, I was in a conference a few days ago, and they were talking, that was centered around grief in the particular workshop that I was in. And we talked about the stages. And so I believe there are 7 stages, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. But you may not go from like 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, 5, 6, 7. It might be 1, 5, maybe back to 3, and then 7, and skipping around. But what are those stages as we're talking about it?
Yeah, and I think it's key to be able to say there's stages as opposed to steps. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you think about steps, you do take one at a time and kind of successfully or in succession of each other. And so I wrote them down just so that I didn't forget them either. The specific stages, you got shock, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, testing, and acceptance.
Okay.
And so, as you said, all of those doesn't mean the person will experience all those with loss. Or they might be able to experience all of them. They may experience a couple of them at a time. It really does depend on the circumstance, the individual, and how they process things. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I don't know that we always identify them, right? Without the assistance of someone else, we may not identify that that's what we're experiencing. There's oftentimes not just with loss of a person to death, but maybe a loss in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Or a way of life. In counseling, there's times I'll talk to people about how it's okay to grieve that loss. It's okay to grieve that separation. In divorce, the same thing that happens. Mm-hmm. And you may go through those different processes. And I think sometimes people experience those stages of grief more in something like a divorce or loss of a job or relationship, sometimes more than they do in death. Because outside of accidents that have happened, oftentimes we see when people lose someone, it's been a process. And so you don't always see those, right? You don't always see those stages in an individual, or you may see all of them.
Okay. One of the things I was reflecting on is, as my grandmother had passed and, you know, really being sad, and like every time I heard about somebody else losing someone, like I found myself being sad again, you know, but also like I found myself being short with my kids. And so if we're talking about like the various stages, those were kind of intermingled, where I was experiencing sadness and then, you know, becoming a little bit more angry with my kids. Mm-hmm. Than I might be just because of how I'm feeling about, you know, losing my grandmother, or how I had been feeling. Mm-hmm. And like at some point, like I noticed I think it was Kobe Bryant's death and his daughter's death, and I wasn't sad about it. And that was, you know, a couple weeks after
we had gone to the funeral. But then when I was talking to a friend who had also experienced loss, then that's when I started feeling sadness again, you know. And so it's really, it's interesting how grief and loss works. And I think it's important for us to have this self-awareness enough to be able to recognize, you know, where we are and what we need in the process. Yeah. You know,
I think proximity, what you describe as proximity, right? So you didn't personally know Kobe and his daughter, to my knowledge, right? That you didn't know them. But this other conversation was with someone that's probably you have a relationship with. Mm-hmm. And so there's already that interaction. You're kind of sharing space with that person. So it's going to conjure up emotion that reminds you of your grandmother, that reminds you of loss. I think that's part of that process, right? And understanding what it is. And one of our other questions, I hope I don't jump down too far, but how men and women process grief differently.
Exactly. I was getting there.
All right. Yeah. So, but I think you kind of hit on that, right? I think it represents itself more or shows itself more in men as anger than it does maybe in women. I'm not saying that women do not experience it that way, but I think it shows up more in men. I experienced very similar after my dad's passing. Is I found myself short. Even when I'm stressed, mm-hmm. my wife will tell me that I'm being short with the boys. And so I think that's just kind of the way we express ourselves. And if we don't acknowledge what's going on, that's what's going to come out. Mm-hmm. And so realizing that, hey, I may be sad. I may be a little depressed because of what I've experienced and how it manifests. I have to identify what's going on and recognize it could be my grief.
Okay. So in terms of like, the differences between, you know, men and women, how do you think it expresses itself with children?
You know, as I thought through that, and I've recently had a number of clients who have lost maybe a parent even. Many single moms now coming because they lost husbands. Mm-hmm. And so they're bringing their children to us. And so I had a couple of different thoughts there. The first thought was, I don't think children experience it the way that we expect them to. I've been even a little shocked of the children have come in and they've lost their dads. And man, they're extremely resilient and amazing how, yeah, there's even expressed, like a young man say, I'm sad and I'm sad that my dad is gone, but I'm okay. Mm-hmm. We expect their worlds to crash, right? Mm-hmm. And that them to be completely devastated. And so I think it's different. I think it's the same with men and women. I think it's the same with children. It really depends on the relationship and at what, we can't determine at what point it's going to impact them. And so I think with children, initially they may have an immediate response because of a really close relationship. Maybe it was shock because it was an accident. So I think it depends on the circumstance. It depends on what was happening. Sometimes when someone has a terminal illness and it's been a long time, there may be a level of relief, as I talked about earlier. So I think, I don't know if we can pinpoint exactly what it's going to look like. I think it depends on the relationship. What kind of support do they have? Just to give you another example, is with my father-in-law as well as with my father. When we told our boys about their passing, mm-hmm. they really kind of were, okay, that's going to be sad. And my son actually then said, but we're going to be okay.
Okay.
And that was really, there's not been any crying. Now, will that happen maybe at the funeral when other people are crying and things are happening? Possibly. But I don't see that it's going to impact their lives in such a way that they're unable to do their day-to-day activities.
For sure. And I think, in my experience with working with youth, like doing groups, I think lots of them, their fathers weren't around. And so I think some of the expression of what we might see in schools that is, you know, could be seen as disruptive or whatever. Mm-hmm. It could be them dealing with, you know, their dad not being around or their mom not being there. And then it's coming out as, you know, anger in school or,
right.
you know, ADHD or distracted or whatever it might be, you know. And so I think it's important to, like you're saying, no matter who we are, whether we're male or female, young or old, learning to have the awareness of who we are as a person, and then if we need to get help, feel strong enough to get the help that we need, and then those of us that are around, seeing other people, offering the support that we can offer, you know. Yeah. So that they can receive it.
Yeah, I think the one thing about young people. Sorry to jump on you, but
no, go ahead.
Jump in between with young people is that they're still trying to figure out what emotions are, and so it's going to come out somehow. And so until they really have a chance to put some language to their emotions, we may not know. And so we do see those behaviors. We do see things that coming out. That young person probably isn't connecting. Well, I'm acting out because my father passed or because of whatever. Mm-hmm. It just may be behavior is the manifestation of what's going on internal. That's where stuff like counseling or just even talking to someone, it may even have to be professional counseling, a pastor or someone, to help them identify what's going on, and maybe it's connected, maybe it's not.
Yeah, I think even thinking about men, like, we tend to be more thought focused than feelings focused. It's like, I know I can do groups and I have to say, okay, remember in my mind, ask them what they think about a particular situation as opposed to how do they feel about it. Because you can ask a man, like, how do you feel or what are feelings, and they're going to be like, happy and sad, and that's it. And it's like, there's
anger.
And anger, you know, and there's like so many more. And so, like, as a father who may not always be in tune with my emotions, how can I help my kids to work through grief if they're experiencing that?
I think the very first thing is being vulnerable enough to show your own, right? And so, though you're not necessarily in tune with it, I think if you're at a moment where you have an overwhelming sense of sadness and it brings on crying, it's okay to let them see you do that. Joy, all those things. I think kids catch more than they hear. Mm-hmm. And so them seeing that, hey, dad has emotions, even if it's inappropriately expressed, right? You talked about being short with your children. Mm-hmm. Coming back around and being able to have a conversation like, hey, I snapped at you. I'm sorry. It's not you and what you're doing. This is what daddy's dealing with. I miss grandma or I miss so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And sometimes this is how it comes out. And I'm sorry if I was short with you. Yes. You know, and so I think talking through the process, because then they can connect, oh, that's why daddy did such and such, or what's going on. Otherwise, I think sometimes as they take it personal and they think daddy's being short, so I must be bad, or right. I must be whatever. And so us having an open conversation with them about why you expressed what you did the way you did, mm-hmm. at least gives them information as they develop their thought around those things.
Yeah. And one of the things that I did is I was in the car and I was using the voice recognition, and I was saying, I want to have a conversation with Michael Cox around grief. And my 6-year-old was in the back seat, and he asked me, well, what is grief? You know, and I was like, okay, well, you remember when your friend left school unexpectedly, and the way that you were feeling at that time, you were feeling, I asked him, I was like, were you angry? Were you sad? And I think, I can't remember exactly what he said. I think he actually said he felt unexpected, which is probably like confused or something is what he's trying to say. But like really trying to, me taking every opportunity that I have to make it a teaching moment, mm-hmm. you know? And so he will experience grief again at some point, you right. know, but we know that's what he was dealing with, yeah. you know, last year. And it was crazy for us as parents and seeing our kid yeah. getting in trouble, but that's how it manifested yeah. itself, you know.
It's a challenge as a therapist even to work with young people. A lot of my work is around emotional regulation for young people. And it's difficult because, it's trying to help young people find terminology for what they're feeling. And most of the times it's somatic, meaning they're feeling it in their body or a behavior response. And so us giving them the terms based upon what we have, it at least gives them some context to begin developing that terminology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thinking about, I guess, like in Austin and the surrounding areas, like if someone is dealing with grief and they feel like they need to go someplace, like where can they reach out to?
Mm-hmm. So there are a number of therapists. If you wanted to seek out actual professional help, mm-hmm. There's a way to do that. Obviously, you can go to wholelifepriorities.com, which is our site.
Say that again for them.
Whole Life, WHOLE, lifepriorities.com. And happy to help out families and individuals. But or if I'm not a fit to try to connect people to professionals that can help them out. I don't necessarily like giving out people's names over.
Oh, for sure.
But can connect people to if they're needing that. The other end of that, if there's not always professional help that's needed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are pastors who are very capable, or clergy that are capable of walking through people in there. I think the biggest deal is just finding support.
For sure.
And know what that support's going to look like for you. And sometimes it's professional, sometimes not.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think what happens if we kind of walk this life and we bury things, underneath the rug, eventually it's going to come out, you know? And so it's so important to take the time to do the things that we need to do to take care of ourselves, you know? And so I guess like thinking in terms of how it might express itself or come out, what do you think that might look like for someone that has really, I guess, become, I guess, apathetic about how they're mm-hmm. feeling? Like, how might that express itself?
Yeah. Man, I think there are so many ways. You have individuals that may seek out substances. Maybe they're feeling something that's going on, but they haven't put a name to it or connected the dots. Mm-hmm. So they find something that numbs them out. Some people, sexually, they feel like they've got to connect to someone. And so maybe they start having multiple sexual encounters. You may start looking like depression, where people just isolating themselves. Man, there's so many, many ways where people bury their emotions or are unconnected with their emotions mm-hmm. that they, like you said, it's going to come out some way. And that's what we see. And typically what happens is family members, individuals, we respond to an expression of emotions as opposed to finding out what's deeper and what's going on there. Yeah. And so we try to fix a behavior as opposed to finding out what's happening, what's internally going on, what's happening deeper with that person, and how do we get that addressed. And sometimes it's necessary for a professional to help in that process. But just being sensitive enough that we see change in behavior, we see a change in what we person can typically presents with, mm-hmm. that's when we should be concerned. Okay. And see there's something shifting, and typically something shifting towards a maladaptive or a negative behavior.
Okay. How would someone know, like, if they need to seek out professional help?
My go-to is when something is happening that's interrupting their day-to-day life. So it is engaging with other people or lack of doing that or not doing it. Not going to work, so impacting their day-to-day work life, or relationships. You start seeing relationships being affected consistently, long-last relationships. And so really looking at when something is impacting someone's life in a negative way, something's up, mm-hmm. right? And it's okay to ask and make observations with that person, but to know what that is, right? And try to figure out, hey, something's going on.
For sure.
And if I can't, like if I'm a family member or something, and say, hey, if we can't get it to the answer together, do we need to find someone to help us out?
So I kind of want to leave us with that. If you recognize, I think we know most of the time we know when we're not doing okay. Mm-hmm. And we may try to say that we're all right, but we typically know when things aren't all right with us. For the most part, I feel that's a true statement. And then as, you know, as fathers, as people in the community, when those that are connected to us, let's really figure out how we can best support them when they're going through things. And, you know, so lots of times people will say, you know, if someone is grieving, just, you know, be wary of how you're, you know, approaching them or asking them questions and things like that, not to, you know, re-trigger them or traumatize them. But I think the most important thing is if you recognize that someone is dealing with something, just, you know, ask them if they need anything or how they're doing, and really making yourself present and becoming a support system for them.
Yeah, I agree.
Is there anything else you want to share with us before we...
No, I think it's specifically to fathers when it comes to grief and just life in general. It's just simply, you've heard it say, it's kind of become a little bit cliche, but hey, it's okay not to be okay. And so when things are going on, seek somebody out. Like you said, some of the very typical things we see are anger, aggression, sexual acts, or whatever it might be for men when it goes to trying to deal with life. When you know something going on, hey, speak up.
For sure. And I was just kind of thinking as far as like the faith aspect, you know, there's God is always present, you know, and so I think it's important for us to figure out how we can make that connection with him, particularly when we're sad, because we know, you know, in the scripture, and I'm going to butcher it right now, but it talks about him being close to us when we're sad. You know what I mean? Somewhere in Proverbs, I know what it is, but I'm going to paraphrase because I can do that,
yeah.
You know, but really knowing that as we begin to draw close to him, he will draw close mm-hmm. to us. And so, you know, in our weakness, he is our strength. And so as much as possible, we have to press into him when we're dealing with things, and he's faithful to us when we're struggling. And so I'm happy to be able to sit here with Michael, you know, on this morning, and you know, thank you, sir. I appreciate your time. And look forward to connecting with you again. And so you guys have been listening to A Father Heard, and you have a blessed one.
Thanks.